You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're still in the first week of 2022. And as per tradition, we'd like to explore some of the developments that is currently happening in the market, perhaps even project the outlook for the rest of the year. But before we can do all that, we want to look at 2021, do a quick recap on some of the mega events that has transpired over the past 1 year. Joining us for this session is Anand Padmakantan, the head of regional equity research at Maybank Investment Banking Group. How are you, Anand? How was your new year?
I'm well, thanks, Ibrahim. Thank you for having me back here.
It's always interesting to have you on because some of the ideas that you share with us are not only contrarian, it's also quite fresh and quite blunt. And that's the point of us having you on time and again, because the views that you give is actually quite, that kind of rawness to it. Because of that, I'd like to, before we jump to the 22 outlook, maybe we can do a quick recap to 21 review or a recap of what has happened last year, Anand.
Yeah, so 2021 for Malaysia in particular, our equity market was a tough year. Yeah, the market was the worst performing index among the benchmarks in ASEAN. And there was a good reason for that. I mean, honestly, on my part, I started off the year quite hopeful. I mean, we had vaccines, you know, we were looking forward to a reopening of the economy. But as we progressed, you know, vaccine rollout was relatively slow to kick off. And we had a very messy political backdrop for much of the early part of the year. Where things started to get interesting was when we had that change in government in the third quarter. And that coincided with the peak in terms of new COVID cases and a sharp ramp up in vaccination. So at that point, it seemed like we were about to go off to the races. But what sort of spoiled the party was Budget 2022. Unfortunately, the measures in Budget 2022 were not equity market friendly. So the biggest, of course, was Cukai Makmur. So that really took the wind out of the market and you know really reduced our earnings expectations for 2022. But there were other irritations as well, like stamp duty, like tax on repatriated foreign income. A lot of those have been watered down as of last week, but in our view, the damage has been done.
Let's talk a little bit more about the items that you mentioned just now, specifically on the extended loan moratoriums, Cukai Makmur. Do you feel that these are populist in nature when it comes to policymaking by the government?
I think there is definitely a fiscal imperative to have these measures because we are in a very difficult fiscal situation. If you look at the government's projections, they are not planning to cut spending. Yeah, spending will continue to increase. So that means the only way to fund that is to increase revenue for the government as well. And where can you go for that revenue? You can't go to consumers. That's not politically expedient. And also household debt is at record levels, 90%. The government can't keep issuing debt. Government debt is also at record levels. So you're really left with the corporate sector. And we saw that, you know, crystallizing in something like Cukai Makmur. Where, you know, really the government is turning to the corporate sector to help fund fiscal gaps. And that's very damaging because now you have this huge overhang. What's the government going to ask the corporate sector next, you know, in terms of money? And what's it going to do to the earnings outlook for the corporate sector?
We all know that the corporate sector has taken a hard hit. Sectors in property, sectors in transportation, for instance, those might be severely impacted. I don't know about manufacturing. Generally speaking, all around, corporate sector is going to be registering lower growth earnings for 2021. Do you feel that there are some bright sparks when it comes to some sectors doing well for last year?
Yeah, I think for 2021, generally, to put things in context, 2021 is the first year of positive growth after 3 years of negative growth for the KLCI. Yeah, and that's really coming off the low base of 2020, which was a complete washout due to the pandemic and the associated lockdowns. What's disappointing to us is, even though 2021 is a bright spark, you know, we're looking at about 30% earnings growth recovery, a lot of it coming off the low base in 2020, as I mentioned. The disappointing part is we're going to go back to negative earnings growth in 2022. And that's so strange because you have GDP growth recovering. Our forecast, 6% GDP growth in 2022 from 3.8% in 2021. But KLCI earnings, minus 7% in 2022. A lot of that is due to the tax levy that I just mentioned.
Now, before we go into the break, what was your overall view of 2021? Do you feel that it was a tough year or a good year or a signal towards a better year for this year?
I think it was good and bad. It was good in the sense that, you know, we had corporates demonstrating their resilience in the pandemic. Yes, we have issues with household debt, household incomes. We have issues with SMEs. But when you look at corporate Malaysia, the big companies, they have actually weathered this crisis quite well. You know, we haven't had any major sort of issues in the corporate space in terms of, you know, NPLs, etc. But the less positive news is, while the corporates have done well, they are vulnerable to political and policy uncertainties. And we've seen that playing out in budget 2022. And we'll continue to see that play out in the run-up to GE15. And that's going to keep the market on the back foot.
All right. We'll ask you about GE15 very shortly. But for now, we have to go for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Anand from Maybank. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me on the line Anand Padmakantan, the Head Regional Equity Research at Maybank Investment Banking Group. Anand, 2022, it all shapes up to be a very interesting year. 2020, 2021, 24 months, very tumultuous period, very uncertain period for us to all go through. It seems like the mood is now here for us to look at 22 as the year of recovery in full swing. Do you share that kind of sentiment? Do you share that kind of belief that 22 is going to be a really good year for most of us?
I think it will be a better year than 2021. I mean, the recovery is real. You know, I mentioned 6% GDP growth this year. It is, you know, driven very much by reopening of the economy. And that is happening. You can see it all around you. Things are back to normal. Traffic jams are back. You know, footfall in retail centers, shopping malls are back. So that will all be reflected in more jobs, better growth, higher income. So that's great for the real economy. For the financial markets, not so great. As I mentioned, there is that Cukai Makmur overhang. And frankly, as I mentioned before, this government, in the run-up to elections, perhaps quite naturally, does have a populist bent. Yeah, so policies will remain relatively populist, and the corporate sector will remain vulnerable to populist policies until we get past the elections, when we can focus on long-term, you know, more optimal economic policies for the country.
Yeah, I thought I would reserve the questions on politics a little bit later, but you're right. We can't really talk about the fiscal policy without talking about politics. And, you know, I really don't blame them because whoever that holds the power right now still would have a populist bent, so to use our framing right now, because election is nigh and here. In fact, they are due to have an election in March 23. So we're looking at 15 months of a must-do election. Prognosticators have already selected some particular windows for an election to take place. But those initial projections have now been revised downward, even later towards the year or even early next year, largely because of the government's way of handling the floods and perhaps other methods related to it. Do you feel that an election can resolve all our woes, or this is just yet another political hurdle that we all have to go through, and then we're back to this square one political quagmire because nobody can actually win a majority? Where do you feel the solution is going to come from the general elections?
Yeah, so I have no way of knowing what the election outcome will be. I don't think anyone does. But I can tell you for a fact that the sooner we hold it, the better for both the country and the market. You know, there are a lot of things that need to be fixed on the fiscal side. And the biggest is widening the revenue generation base for the government. Right now, it's far too narrow. And that's why, you know, you have these policies where you have opportunistic raiding of corporates and other parts of the economy to raise funding. Very disruptive and creates a lot of uncertainty. Now, unless you're going to commit political suicide, you're not going to recommend GST come back before an elections. Even though, in our view, indirect taxes like GST are the most efficient way to improve our fiscal standing going forward. So that's why, get past the elections and let's see, you know, credible policies like GST coming back, or other indirect taxes, capital gains maybe, or carbon tax, you know, all the stuff that is very difficult to pass before an elections, but much more realistic if there's a proper government, you know, a mandated government who can do that after the elections, but they don't have to worry about votes anymore. You know.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I think that could be a way forward for the betterment of the country. However, political will do dictate that those in power will continue to cling to power for a longer period of time. I don't know whether there is an impetus for the election to take place anytime sooner. How does this affect investors, foreign and domestic alike? What about fund managers? Do they have that mood of spending, or sorry, investing a lot more? Or do you feel that a lot of people will still continue to hold their cash before starting to think about investing in this country?
They will continue to hold their cash. It's a very straightforward answer. We already saw this happening in the latter part of last year. You know, market volumes were dwindling to new lows, and they remain at new lows in the opening of this year. And it's primarily because until we have the elections and clear up all these political and policy uncertainties, it's very difficult to make a long-term investment case for Malaysia, for investing in Malaysia. Yeah, so for equities in particular, for the bond market, all you care about is being repaid by the government, and that's okay. So the bond market will probably be a relatively more attractive area for foreign investors still, despite the ratings risk. But for equities, you know, we really need that policy clarity that comes from post-elections government, you know, with a strong mandate coming into power. Yeah.
While we wait for that policy clarity to come, we have to look at some of the items that are currently being done in Malaysia, both corporate and government alike. One item is, of course, to improve the returns on GLIC as well as GLC. The ROI for these kind of grouping of companies is actually quite crucial. Do you feel that Perkukuh programs or programs that is being rolled out currently by the MOF is indeed crucial for them to improve on the ROIs for GLCs and GLICs?
It's definitely an ambitious program, and it is welcome. I mean, GLCs are about 35% of the KLCI, so they are a big, you know, economic block, and they are a big employer. And we all want them to do well, because then the market can do well and the country can do well. The problem is, over the last decade or so, it's become very sclerotic, I guess is the word I would use, where they're not very nimble, they're a bit slow, a bit sluggish, you know, and returns have not been on par, anywhere close to on par with their private sector counterparts, in whatever sector you want to compare them with. So a shakeup is due. But again, comes back to politics. Yeah, because nothing happens with GLC management or GLIC management, and their strategies are always subject to the politics of the day. Yeah. So very difficult for me to see Perkukuh by itself making a big difference unless, you know, the powers that be are willing to push through dramatic reforms. And again, you know, those kind of things are only possible once you receive a strong mandate from the voters.
Moving away from GLICs and GLICs and GLCs, let's focus a little bit more about corporate pure play. Some interesting developments are hitting the market. We're talking about, for instance, 5G and how, you know, the DNB is going to play out with the MNOs. Is telco an area of your interest right now?
It's not one of our top sectors. I mean, the whole DNB infrastructure issue with the telcos and continuing negotiations, we wait to see how that plays out. Yeah, we do have picks in the telco sector, you know, Telkom, Axiata, among picks that we like, but not so much because of the DNB play per se. It's more because of general 5G growth and broadband rollout for Telkom, and the fact that Axiata's overseas operations are doing better. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I must say the structure, where, you know, DNB owns the infrastructure and leases it out to the telco players, on its own, objectively, it is a sound structure. Many countries practice that, and it prevents a lot of capex duplication by the individual mobile players. But again, you know, I guess the devil's in the details, which is why it's taking so long to confirm the agreements.
Other areas of focus would be financials. I think the banking sector has enjoyed quite strong growth despite loan moratoriums being put in place. And segments like corporate banking as well as investment banking seems to be on the growth again for some, at least some banks. Do you feel that financials is going to be a good area to look at right now?
Well, I think capital market related activities have been very profitable the last 18 months. I mean, it's not just a stock market where volumes have been very high, and there's been a lot of commission income. But also, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of deals, a lot of IPOs have come to the market. We know the pipelines are looking good for this year as well. So investment banking as a whole looks like it will have another good year, maybe with less broking income. But commercial banking, core banking, you know, we've had 18 months of being in this sort of this suspended anime, you know, phase where we don't recognize NPLs, basically. You know, we have the moratoriums, even though 24% of loans outstanding require assistance, they are not considered NPLs yet. But the moratoriums end this year. Yeah, so that's when we're going to see the real picture when it comes to how bad the NPL situation in the economy is going to be. So I think even though banks, resilient, well-capitalized, very liquid, not in danger of any stress, but profits could still be held back as we start to recognize this NPL situation.
So because of this, we also have to look at the market per se. I know we touched a little bit on segments, but I think, do you feel that the expectation of a rate hike is going to happen this year? And with that, do you think that Malaysia will face some sort of inflationary pressure? And perhaps how to mitigate these kind of risks moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, a rate hike, our house view is that there will be a single rate hike in the fourth quarter of this year by 25 basis points. So no more rate cuts by Bank Negara. The next move in the OPR will be up. And that's for two reasons. One is we expect the US, which has been accelerating its tapering, to raise rates this year. In fact, we expect three rate hikes by the US this year. And the other is inflation. It's proving to be more intractable than expected all over the world. Yeah, and our own inflation numbers are also on the high side. So I think as the economy recovers more solidly into the second half of this year, Bank Negara will be more comfortable to start the rate increase cycle. But it will be gradual.
And of course, do you think that some form of mitigation needs to be put in place by investors, both retail and institutional alike, in terms of facing this inflationary pressure?
Yeah, I mean, there's no perfect answer for inflation hedges. I mean, in most economies, people buy tangible assets. Property should be doing well. It tends to keep its value in an inflationary environment. Cash, definitely not. You know, so you should stay invested in something that gives you a return higher than the risk-free rate. But, you know, it's difficult. When you interest rates going up, not great for bonds. Malaysian property market outlook, still challenging. A lot of oversupply, sluggish. You're really only left, I hate to say this, but you're only really left with equities as if you're only looking at Malaysia. Equities is the only thing that really gives you that extra return that will keep you ahead of inflationary pressures. And, you know, there's plenty of stocks that give yields of 5, 6% now in the market that will help you deal with those inflation, that inflation erosion.
All right. Therefore, we have to talk about other markets right now. Do you feel that because Malaysia is being a laggard in terms of our ASEAN counterparts, do you feel that there's a need for us to really look into diversifying our investment portfolio, you know, not just in ASEAN, but in other emerging markets, in developed markets, in the US, I don't know, Europe? What would be some of the top picks in terms of market orientation or market diversification strategy that you can share with us?
Sure. I mean, when you talk to our clients, our institutional clients, you know, market volumes have been good for the last 18 months, but that's really been driven by the retail segment, and it continues to be driven by the retail segment. If you look at the institutional participation, it has been declining for a long time, and it continues to decline. And when we ask them, our institutional partners or clients, where are you trading? You're not trading in Malaysia. They said, oh, well, we're trading in North America. We're trading in North Asia, you know, where you have a lot of new economy stocks. There's a lot more vibrancy, you know, ESG, renewables, so much more to play with. And we don't have to worry about, you know, all the domestic noise like politics in particular and policy. And frankly, it's very difficult to see that reversing. I think the trend is still for local institutions to try to invest more overseas. They have seen EPF do it with huge success. You know, EPF has had great returns on its overseas investments. So, you know, you do have a sort of a very good guiding light there as to where perhaps the returns will be better compared to the domestic investment options.
A few weeks ago, PNB announced the ASB returns, but that aside, it's also a good signal for us to look at the appetite of PNB trying to invest more in overseas market. Perhaps, do you think that this is taking a cue from EPF in terms of diversifying the way they invest as well?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, all the funds in Malaysia recognize that we are a middle-income trap country at this point in time. And a middle-income trap country finds it very hard to generate bottom line returns because top line is pressured. There are a lot of competitors, margins get squeezed, and we're seeing that in multiple sectors. So the return in terms of growth is very much pressured unless you can find new sources of growth. And when you find a new source of growth, all the money rushes into that sector. Malaysian tech is a classic example of that. But Malaysian tech is not driven by the domestic economy. It's driven by the global economy. So So for local institutions, it's another way to diversify outside Malaysia, because you're buying a Malaysian company, but really it's not selling in Malaysia, it's selling globally. So they can do it in two ways. They can buy those companies, which they have been, and which now trade at 40, 50 times PE, or they can take the money out of the country and put it, you know, in other countries and buy stocks in those countries. And both those things have been going on for quite a while now and are unlikely to reverse.
Okay. One more short break. When we come back, we'll conclude our conversation with Anand of Maybank Investment Bank. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me on the line Anand Padmakantan, the head of regional equity research at Maybank IB. Anand, let's talk a little bit more about two items that is very close to my heart. Number one is unemployment rate, particularly youth unemployment rate, where DOSM or the Department of Statistics suggest it could be anywhere between 800,000 to 1.2 million, depending on how you classify underemployment. That's one. And of course, the other is on the element of how businesses are trying to digitize themselves. We've heard a lot about that over the past 2 years. Many of them get the idea, some of them do not, and almost all of them have trouble in terms of implementing it. So there's a lot of inefficiencies and inability, I guess, for them to execute that part of their business. So how do you feel unemployment is going to play a role for 2022? Do you feel that this is going to be a growing concern for us moving ahead?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about youth unemployment, that's not a new concern. That's been around for the past decade, to be honest. I mean, but what is a new concern is the pandemic has boosted overall unemployment, not just youth unemployment. 2022, GDP recovery, we should see broad unemployment come down. But will youth unemployment come down at the same pace or at a faster pace? That's a very difficult question. I think, you know, there's no easy solution to that issue. It really boils down to education and, you know, creation of jobs. Now, the government makes quite a big deal about FDI. Yeah. But let's not forget, FDI is only one third of private investment in Malaysia. Two thirds, and the one that creates the most jobs, is domestic direct investment, investment by Malaysian firms in Malaysia. And that has been shrinking for the last 4 years, year on year. So if the government really wants to solve unemployment in a big way, it shouldn't just rely on FDI stats. It should look at the domestic demand, domestic direct investment stats, and speak to these companies and ask them, what do you need, you know, to invest more in Malaysia? Stop investing offshore. Invest here.
Yeah, but that is a function. But that is a function of retail growth, consumption growth, many of which is actually quite depleting, right? Over the past few months, if not years.
Yes, it's all, you know, in the same ecosystem. How do you get demand? You got to create jobs that provide good salaries, so you can create demand. So yeah, so that's part of the equation. But the other part is also government policy. You know, should we reduce the prices of cars, reduce taxes on cars, so that people have more income to put into other consumption that can create jobs in other sectors, rather than the government taking a lot of the money for fiscal spending purposes, which perhaps have less of an impact on unemployment. So there are many ways, you know, to deal with it, but it has to be a holistic response. There's no one silver bullet.
The way I look at it is that the direction from the government has to be clear. This is the same common theme that we end up talking on, and every time you come on my show, it's back to that whole overarching solution that the government needs to provide. Do you feel that there is an impetus from the government of the day, at least for this year, to provide some clarity in terms of direction? You know, we've spoken about this quite a few times already, but do you feel that you know, they realize that the need for them to come out with good, clear policies is actually very, very important for them to churn it out right now?
I think they do realize it. The question is, again, political expediency over long-term planning. I mean, you are facing an election. You do have to, I suppose, as a government in power, want to make sure you get re-elected. And that doesn't necessarily equate to the best long-term policies on the economic front. Yeah, and we've seen that by the 2022. I mean, we might see one or two other measures in the run-up to elections, which are quite populist and not probably in the country's long-term interest. But again, you know, frankly, if we want to see real policy change, we do need the political equation to be in place, especially for a country like Malaysia, where so many parts of the economy are tied into what happens in politics. and policy. So our best case scenario, we have elections early, and there's a strong mandate for whatever government is formed, yeah, coalition, single party, it doesn't matter, strong mandate. And then they can finally focus not on surviving, but on thriving in a much more progressive and long-term Malaysian strategy, yeah, for growth.
That's a good way to end. Anand, thank you again for taking the time to speak with us. That was Anand Padmakanthan, the head of regional equity research at Maybank Investment Banking Group. If you've missed any part of this show, just head on to astroawani.com, look for Notepad. You can also find their latest 2022 outlook. Just go to Maybank IB and download their research for the outlook for this year. That's a very interesting read. It's out today, actually. That's it for now. Catch you in the next one.